family is all that lives in sight and sound, touch and taste. Live, come on, be human and give, give, give. The Woodstock Roundtable welcomes you to be a part of being human. Aho!
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Woodstock Roundtable. Doug Grunthe, your host, and we look forward to 2 hours of conversational improvisation, including some music as we open up the Woodstock Roundtable jukebox for the best in summer music and having some fun playing some songs at the same time. Why? We'll get into that. Joining me, as he does every week, engineering our show and co-hosting is on-air warrior here at Radio Woodstock, Ron Van Wormer. We will have music from the Sultan of Sonic Soul, Gus Mancini. An existential wrap-up with our favorite street philosopher, Patrick Carlin. Among the topics of conversation, one of our favorite subjects, the human brain, specifically, why the right hemisphere of our brain is going to become more and more important as we move through the 21st century. We will take a look at how the world's most famous mystery writer actually vanished at a certain point and created a whole mystery around her life. We'll also review some of the tough trivia questions from our last trivia competition at the Colony. And if that's not enough, we always leave room for surprises because they tend to find us. Fasten your seatbelts. Get something good to drink. Join us for the Woodstock Roundtable. Open the pod bay doors, Hal, and let's get rocking and rolling and rollicking. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, Doug.
How are your headsets?
They're okay now.
Are they?
Sure,
okay, because I was getting static, so I gave them to you.
Yeah, no, we got them together now.
All right, I can actually now hear what I'm saying.
Oh, good.
We'll see whether that's an advantage or not. Now, as I'm driving in today from Kingston to our studio, I did something that really speaks to our opening topic today, which are the two hemispheres of the human brain. We have a left and right hemisphere. And thanks to EEG and MRI technology, neuroscientists now have a greater understanding, at least anatomically, of how these two operate and communicate together, which basically reveals why we think the way we do and how we think. And it's a fascinating topic. I did a talk about this 7 months ago at this really cool salon down in New York City.
Oh, cool.
And now I've been asked to do it up here for a salon.
I didn't know they did salons still.
You don't find too many, but there's a gentleman. I heard about them because the one up here is hosted by someone I know.
Ah.
When I say hosted, he provides the space. It's a really cool space in West Hurley. And it turns out these salons have been going on for decades down in the city. But then the gentleman, one of the founders who has a second home up here, as we have a big second home community, started one up here.
Oh, very cool.
So I've done, and I'm going to do the one up here in a few weeks. So
it's like the Woodstock Roundtable Salon.
Well, it will be this time because I'm going to be talking about this subject. So what I thought I would do is grab my notes from the talk I did 7 months ago.
Yeah.
And I'm always researching this topic because I find it fascinating. So I have some additional notes and just bring them in and have at it today because it's fascinating. But as I'm coming in to the show today, I decided, for example, that a simple one. I had forgotten, a senior moment, the name of the greatest group of session musicians ever. They've hundreds of number one hits. And since we're going to do some summer music in the second half, and you have to do the Beach Boys if you're talking about summer music, this was the group that backed the Beach Boys along with just about everybody. It was Phil Spector's Wall of Sound.
Right.
And I couldn't remember the name of the group. So I put on my Bluetooth.
Uh-huh.
And I, into my smartphone, said, what was the name of the session musicians that backed the Beach Boys? And right away, the voice of my smartphone says it was the Wrecking Crew.
The Wrecking Crew, that's right. Now, there was a woman in the Wrecking Crew, you know, who did
the bass player.
Guitar playing.
Well, she was a bass player.
She was amazing.
And she was one of the best.
She died recently.
Yeah, I'm forgetting her name. We have to get her name.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
But she, like a number of the Wrecking Crew members, were jazz musicians.
Yeah.
But they couldn't make money doing jazz gigs in the early 60s. So they started showing up to do rock. And Spector loved them. And Spector created, you know, Phil Spector created the Great Wall of Sound with the Ronettes and the Crystals and all. That was the Wrecking Crew.
Yeah.
And the Wrecking Crew, the members would, you know, the musicians would come and go, but among the musicians of the Wrecking Crew were, you know, some pretty famous people.
Yeah. Who's the guy? He became a country singer.
Glenn Campbell.
Glenn Campbell, there you go.
Who was a great guitar player.
Yeah, amazing.
Leon Russell.
Right.
Was one of the keyboard players for a while. And these guys and women played in, so, you know, just there's a great documentary on them. At any rate, we take it for granted that we can literally just talk into our smartphone or into our computer and say, tell me, you know, the session musicians that back the Beach Boys. But this is where it gets interesting with how our brains work. Okay. Computers already are relatively equal and will soon surpass the human brain's ability to analyze. A computer can remember a lot more than the human brain can. The part of our brain that counts on remembering things and analyzing things and putting data together is the left hemisphere of our brain. It is the hemisphere which, to our good fortune and also to our great demise, has dominated the thinking of not only human beings over thousands of years, but cultures and empires, which have a thinking process. And the left hemisphere of the brain is the part that is about memory, analysis, taking things apart to see how the parts fit together, and taking different elements of information and integrating them into a theory. So it's the analytical part of our brain.
It's the part of the brain that is letting me down.
Well,
as I get older.
But here's the good news.
Oh, good.
Computers are already more effective in most areas of our left hemisphere thinking.
And I think that's part of the reason that mine is less agile than it used to be.
It is. It's not only that we get older, but the less we use a part of our brain, it's just like aerobics, the weaker it becomes. Uh-huh. So when I do something which we consider basic, it isn't. It's rather amazing that I can talk into this machine and through this Bluetooth technology in my car, get an answer to a question in seconds.
Yeah.
What was all that computer knowledge doing? It was doing what our left hemisphere of the brain does. Oh, who was the Wrecking Crew? And then we either remember it or we don't.
Right.
And if you think about it, through EEG and MRI technology, neuroscientists can literally see what parts of the brain are operating, lights going on, and what neurons are firing and how they fire. Now, believe me, most of how our brain works is still a mystery for reasons we'll get into. But we know a lot more than we've known because of this new technology, which allows neuroscientists to look into the brain as it's working. So think about it. What does our left hemisphere of the brain do when we're trying to remember something? It basically is a retrieval function.
Right.
It's no different than if we said, went to a library and looked at and went into the index, right, and found a book on rock and roll history, went into the index, looked under Beach Boys, started reading and found the Wrecking Crew was the session. This would take hours.
Yeah, and it did. And I used to have a library of reference books, which mm-hmm. I no longer have.
No need.
Because I don't need it anymore.
So what what our left brain does and what we do is what computers can do in infinitely less time and much more effectively.
Yeah.
That's why all the way back, this is ancient history, 1996, that's a long time ago in terms of computer technology, Garry Kasparov, the number one chess player in the world and considered the greatest of all time, after five games against IBM's Big Blue, just said, I'm not playing it anymore.
Yeah.
Because he realized...
Didn't he win early games?
Yes.
Yeah.
And just like on Jeopardy, when they first tried to create... When Watson, the IBM computer, first played Jeopardy... Couldn't beat even a decent player.
Uh-huh.
But they fine-tuned it to where the best Jeopardy player of all time couldn't come close. So what these computers are doing is primarily the left hemisphere of our brain has been doing.
Right.
So rather than bemoan the fact that we're not needed for that much anymore, if we're smart, we'll say, well, wait a minute, what about the right hemisphere of the brain where computers can't come close? In my opinion, it's and I'm prejudiced because it turns out I only know this now. Since I'm a little kid, I was primarily a right hemisphere thinker.
Uh-huh.
That's why I hated school. Because our educational system, even today, in the 21st century of computer technology, is still based on a 19th century industrial model.
Right.
Memorizing facts.
And schools look like warehouses and factories
anyway.
They are.
And so that was all about left hemisphere thinking. Now, the left hemisphere cannot deal with uncertainty. It cannot deal with ingenuity. It cannot deal with mystery. The left hemisphere of our brain can only relax when it can know something.
Yeah.
When it can identify something. It's the right hemisphere of our brain that is really good at intuitive understandings, at being creative, imaginative, artistic. The reason many of the greatest artists of all time never fit into society is not just because they were ornery or antisocial. That could be part of it.
Yeah.
It's because if you are primarily a right brain thinker, which means you're more creative, artistic, imaginative, you don't fit into cultures because every human culture, maybe not the Balinese culture. Okay, I mean, you might find an exception. In Bali, by the way, someone, a Westerner, asked, what is your word for art? And the answer was, we don't have one. We do everything as beautifully as we can. All right, there's very few cultures like that.
Yeah.
Primarily cultures, certainly in the West, some of the ancient Asian cultures were much more right brain. Almost every contemporary culture is left brain.
Yeah.
It wants to analyze fact data and come up with certain results and practical results.
Right.
Nothing wrong with that. That's part of why we enjoy life, is because we have certain practical features of our life that are taken care of, you know, like finding food and keeping cool enough or warm enough, protection from the elements. At any rate, computers are already better at most of the left hemisphere functions.
Yeah.
So if we're smart, both as individuals and as societies, we will start focusing more on right hemisphere thinking. So someone says, well, wait a minute. Some people are just born with a greater talent for art than others. Some are born with a greater talent for engineering. Well, we need engineers to make the computers even better.
Right.
It's not that engineers go away or this or that. It's just the fact is that this is just a fact. Whether it's good or bad can be debated. I think it's good, but that's because I've always been a right brain thinker. But this is a fact. If we remain left hemisphere cultures and societies, we're going to dissipate because we're not as good at it as computers, and we need more right hemisphere thinking to solve the problems we haven't solved yet.
So the right hemisphere is the creative side. So now computers have given us the luxury of being more creative rather than analytical.
Exactly my point. You said it better than I did. So that's exactly the point that I would make. Now, we'll get into it in a little more detail,
mm-hmm.
in case you just think this is just some kind of fantasy thinking, all right? And I'm going to start out with a general fact that comes from neuroscience, which is kind of mind-blowing. In neuroscience, the issue of free will is a hot and undecided topic for now. It centers around a study first conducted in the 1980s by the physiologist Benjamin Libet, who famously used EEG technology to show the activity in the brain's motor cortex can be detected 300 milliseconds before a person feels that he has decided to move at that moment.
Hmm.
In other words, and this is now indisputable, moments before any of us are aware of what we're going to do, there's a gap because our brain has already determined what we're going to do. We just aren't conscious of it yet.
Huh.
Now, you say, well, it's only milliseconds. What's the difference? It's a big difference because it brings up a huge philosophical issue, which is if a part of our brain that we're not aware of knows what we're going to do before we do it, who the hell are we?
Yeah.
Now, those who are left hemisphere thinkers are saying, come on, this is no big deal. It's just a mechanical fact that there's a gap. But this is a huge issue because it gets to the subject, which I studied for 10 years and then realized, nope, people just run away from it. So I'm coming at it from the right hemisphere rather than calling it the unconscious.
Uh-huh.
Because nobody wants to deal with their unconscious.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, Freud was wrong about a lot of things, but he was right that well over 90% of our behavior is driven by unconscious impulses. And now neuroscience is confirming it. Now, the right hemisphere of our brain is directly connected to our unconscious. And by the way, no EEG or MRI technology can identify where the unconscious is. Some scientists right. think it's in certain parts of the brain, but they don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it could turn out that part of these impulses don't even come from inside our own bodies. They might come from some field, just like gravity comes from a field. We don't know.
Huh.
But what we do know is that the right hemisphere of our brain is directly connected to the unconscious. And so when thoughts start happening, happen through neurons and synapses, which they can now trace with these technologies,
uh-huh.
it first comes from the unconscious, whatever that is, that field, into the right hemisphere of the brain. The right hemisphere of the brain is not analytical. It doesn't try to figure it out. It takes the information and kind of plays with it and then passes it on to the left hemisphere, which interprets it.
Ah.
This is all happening in milliseconds.
Right.
But not at the same time.
So the right and the left are communicating constantly.
Constantly, unless the anatomical part of the brain that divides the right hemisphere from the left hemisphere, which is called the, I think it's called the callosum, but I gotta find it. The corpus callosum, I think is its name. It's some, yeah, the corpus callosum. I had that right.
There you go.
So the left hemisphere of my brain just worked effectively.
So we know the left hemisphere is learning all the time.
Well, so is the right hemisphere.
That's the question.
They're learning in different languages.
Ah, okay.
Now, when we think of language, we think of verbal language.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually a very small part of our language. Most of our language is nonverbal.
Okay.
And there's verbal language, there's written language, there's sign language, there's visual language, there's intuitive language, there's all sorts of different languages of how we sense the world. We're most familiar with the left hemisphere because that's the part our education is primarily based on.
Right. I've often looked at babies and wondered what they're thinking because they don't have words for whatever that is.
So neurons are developing.
What's going through their brain?
Neurons are developing because, and in our culture, and it makes sense, it takes them time to learn the verbal language,
right,
and then the written language. Those are very important languages, but they're only a small sampling of languages. The right hemisphere works in very different languages, intuitive languages, more mystical languages, artistic languages, creative languages. But we're more familiar with the left hemisphere. So basically what happens is unconscious impulses come through the right hemisphere. The right hemisphere absorbs them, plays with them in its language, but it's primarily not conscious yet. Passes it along to the left hemisphere, which then interprets it.
Right.
Where we've screwed up as a culture, and the best book on this, it's a big book. It's like 450 pages. It's a bit complex, but it's well written, although a little on the dry side in terms of language, but it's a fascinating subject. It's called The Master, and I've talked about this book before, Ian McGilchrist, a Scottish neurologist and scientist and philosopher, wrote a book called The Master and His Emissary.
Wow.
And it is replete with hard-nosed research as well as philosophical thinking and questions and theories. And the reason he calls it The Master and Its Emissary, which is a brilliant title, is because he shows how the right hemisphere, and not all neuroscientists agree with him, but he shows how the right hemisphere is the master. It's the master of taking the unconscious drives and playing with them in a very creative, artistic, and imaginative way, which is primarily what makes us human. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The emissary is the left hemisphere, which reports back to our right hemisphere in a language that we are more familiar with, which is written and spoken language.
Right.
Which the right hemisphere doesn't work with. So he tells a story of, there's an old story of a emperor, the master, who meets this brilliant person who he hires as his emissary to go out and do diplomacy with other empires.
Uh-huh.
But the emissary has an ego and determines after about a year that he's smarter than the emperor and he'll just do things on his own and screws everything up, right? And that's a metaphor for where we are now as a human species. The left hemisphere of our brain is very important. It's gotten us this far. If you think of the Industrial Revolution and capitalism, that is almost purely left hemisphere thinking.
Right.
And we gained a lot of advantages because of the Industrial Revolution and the development of capitalism. Why is this left hemisphere? Well, what is the Industrial Revolution about? It's about taking parts and creating larger entities from those parts in a very sequential and logical fashion. The assembly line is a perfect metaphor for the left hemisphere of our brain.
Right.
It's very practical. It's very pragmatic. And as long as it's, you know, got enough juice, energy, electricity, oil, whatever to run it, it works. Of course, we now know that human beings, that the millions of jobs in both the United States and around the world that are basically assembly line warehouse jobs, human beings are being replaced.
Right.
We're not as good at it as computers and robots are.
Yeah.
We don't have to like it. It's a fact. So the very part of our brain that created the Industrial Revolution has now created a computer intelligence and a robotic intelligence that's going to replace us properly in all those jobs that are basically assembly line, because it's all left hemisphere thinking.
And you think that would be a good thing, because there's nothing more mindless than working on a factory line.
But only if our culture, kicking and screaming, rewires itself to find more jobs,
right,
that are right hemisphere, and then create an educational system that celebrates the right hemisphere of the brain instead of our educational system, which totally suppresses it. Now, I don't know a lot about the Waldorf school and some of these progressive right. schools, but those schools, what I've read, are, and Woodstock Day School, for example, uh-huh. is an example, are very heavily oriented on right hemisphere thinking.
Rather than teaching facts.
It's not that they don't teach facts. Right. It's that it doesn't rely as much on memorizing facts and regurgitating them on a test. It's much more about opening up an individual student's mind to see what do they really like to do. And then how do we stimulate that?
Right. And how do you translate that into something
practical? Because not everybody's going to be an artist. Not everybody right. is going to be a creative thinker. But that's not all that the right hemisphere does. The right hemisphere is the part of our brain that has intuitive flashes.
Uh-huh.
Albert Einstein, the reason he was a terrible student is because he was totally right-brained, hemisphere-wise, which is why he came up with the theory of relativity. But he was a C student.
Right.
Okay? So there's precedence for this. But you don't have to be an Einstein to find a more fulfilling life with a better or with a more emphasis on the right hemisphere of the brain. Yes, it's about writing poetry and creating art
uh-huh.
and discovering amazing scientific theories, but it's also about creativity and more holistic thinking. You see, the left hemisphere of our brain can only understand something by breaking it down into its parts. The right hemisphere doesn't understand that way. The right hemisphere can almost instantaneously get the big picture.
Right.
So the solution to climate change, if we find it in time, the solution to how to feed 8 billion people, which we haven't figured out yet with all yeah. of our industrial models, with all of our left brain thinking, and the reason we haven't, and McGilchrist goes into this because he's also a psychiatrist.
Uh-huh.
The reason that all this brilliant human left hemisphere thinking hasn't done anything significant about climate change or feeding more people around the world or dealing with immigration or all these issues is because the left hemisphere of the brain is incapable. The left hemisphere of the brain is brilliant, but it is territorial.
Mm-hmm.
And it is much more self-referential.
So the right-hand brain comes up with the concept of something, like an inventor will come up with a concept. Somebody invented a steam engine, and then two people around the same time invented steam ships, but only because the steam engine had already been
right.
invented.
It's not quite that direct because okay. both hemispheres of the brain are important.
Mm-hmm.
They both think, they both feel. Only the left hemisphere speaks.
Uh-huh.
Only the left hemisphere writes.
Huh.
But that's codifying something, which is breaking right. it down again. And what we don't understand is that as brilliant as written and spoken language is, it's the reason we're the most intelligent in many ways, not all, species on the planet. But it's also the reason why we have basically raped the environment, destroying yeah. the rainforest, which is our lifeblood and our oxygen. Why are we doing that? It's because the left hemisphere of the brain can't think outside of its own self-interest.
Right.
Welcome to human history.
Yeah.
Somebody's right hemisphere brain came up with, or some group collaboratively came up with, one of the most brilliant insights in human history, which no other animal has come up with. It's called the golden rule.
Ah.
Now think about it. The golden rule is very practical. The left hemisphere of our brain can understand the practical results of the golden rule. Oh, wait a minute. I get it. If everybody was really concerned about what they did and how it affected others, we would all benefit from that.
Absolutely.
There's a logical...
Yeah.
But unfortunately, left hemisphere of the brain, rather than thinking that, gets into its own private self-referential safety features.
Right.
And once that happens, it kind of stops and says, wait a minute, I got to protect myself.
So it's do unto others before they do unto you.
That's how the left hemisphere more often than not thinks.
Right.
Just open up the paper every day and you see that.
Yeah.
Okay. So empires, human empires, and human individuals have been very, very heavily oriented towards the left hemisphere of the brain. And we see now the limitations of that. And we have created, with both our left and right hemisphere of the brains, a whole nother level of intelligence called machine or computer intelligence, mm-hmm. or AI, which is already more effective at left hemisphere thinking than we are.
Yeah.
You said it best. If we're smart, we'll say, that's great. We can now focus on the right hemisphere, which is more creative, more imaginative, more empathetic, uh-huh. and much more, unfortunately, this is a word that's been co-opted, holistic.
Uh-huh.
The left hemisphere is great at breaking things down into parts. It's useless at coming up with a big picture. That's the right hemisphere. And so it's not an accident that one of the reasons the right hemisphere is better at all this is because it's directly connected to our unconscious. And it doesn't try to figure out the unconscious. I did dream work with a master, and Jeremy Taylor came on our show for 10 years. And people, they're kind of interested in their dreams and this and that. But that's totally right brain work. And people are basically scared of their dreams because the left hemisphere of the brain has no... The left hemisphere of the brain is the reason dream work is so dull in this country because can you break down a dream into its parts and say, oh, this took place in water. Water is usually about the emotions. Yes, you can. But that's not how you get to the deeper meaning of a dream.
People want a practical solution
to
for
their
everything.
Dreams. And that's that what dreams, that's not how dreams are communicating.
Mm.
You might as well try to explain to a Frenchman something in Swahili, or an American something in Swahili. Break down a dream into its parts and say this is what and analyze and see what it means. You're robbing the dream of most of its power. So I realized, okay, let me go to the right hemisphere of the brain because there's a better chance people will be interested in it because people just don't want to do dream work.
Right.
Okay. So. Like it or not, and again, those folks, one of the reason most of us are more left hemisphere oriented is not because that's natural, but because that's the way our educational system and that's the way our societies put value. That better change.
Yeah.
Or this species ain't making it over the next 100 years. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll get a little more into this, and then we'll talk about when the world's most famous mystery writer vanished. This is the Woodstock Roundtable. Doug Grunthe, your host. Ron Van Wormer co-hosting, controlling Hal the computer, and he'll be here after I leave to play you great music the rest of the morning. We're talking about the left and right hemisphere of the human brain. Fascinating topic, important topic.
Yeah.
We first learned about the two hemispheres back in the 1960s when a neuropsychologist named Roger Sperry discovered almost that... an epilepsy patient didn't have the corpus callosum that separated the left and right hemisphere could see more readily how the two different hemispheres had totally different languages.
Wow.
And... because it turns out, when it's severed, which is not something you want,
no,
it helps epilepsy patients for some reasons.
Huh.
But that's when he discovered, quote, each hemisphere is a conscious system in its own right. Both the left and right hemisphere may be conscious simultaneously, but in different, even mutually conflicting mental experience that run along in parallel. So one of the reasons we're confused a lot and anxious a lot is a lack of understanding that the two hemispheres of our brain at the same time taking information very differently. And even though we're much more conscious unless we practice,
uh-huh.
there are practices, meditation is one. Only one. Only it's not the only one, but it's one. What is meditation doing? It's bypassing the left hemisphere to get to the right hemisphere of the brain. That's what meditation is.
Uh-huh.
But there are visualization techniques, self-hypnotic techniques, dream work, lots of ways, artwork, tapping into the right hemisphere of the brain. But they both work simultaneously. They're both very important. But as we've talked about historically, we are way overweighted in terms of putting importance on the left hemisphere of the brain. And we're now seeing the limitations of that.
Yeah.
We're seeing, how can a capitalist system, think about this just for a second. Forget about whether you're a conservative or a progressive or a Republican or a Democrat. Just think about this. Our economy in the United States is based on consumerism.
Absolutely.
If people aren't consuming, we don't have a vibrant economy.
Right.
Now, one can debate whether it makes sense to have to base an economic system on getting people to consume not only what they need, but what they don't need. That's another topic. The fact of the matter is, our economic system to succeed is based on consumerism. And yet, everything that's been done in our government, from Ronald Reagan right through to Trump, which includes Clinton and Obama, mm-hmm. Democrats, has been to create this gap between the 1% and the 99%.
Yeah.
Through the tax code, through the corporate code, through the legal system. It's been done. It's been manipulated. It can be very carefully and closely documented. This is what's happened. And this is no different than what other empires have done. Kings and queens could do it easily because no one could challenge them. They controlled the army.
Right.
Okay. It's a little more subtle in our system because it's possible for an entrepreneur in the United States in a garage to come up with an idea and become a billionaire.
Uh-huh.
It's been done.
Yeah.
But not often. And the fact of the matter is we have a gap between the 1% own the vast majority of everything. My question is, a friend of mine I went to college with would say, being a good Republican, okay, that may be unfortunate, but as long as someone didn't cheat, and of course a lot of them do, and someone worked hard, why should they give up the money? Why shouldn't they make as much money as they can if they're smart enough to do it?
Uh-huh.
My only point is this: then how are you going to have an economy that works? If 99% of the people, if the middle class has been totally dissipated in this country, it's hard to identify a middle class anymore.
Uh-huh.
If over the last, and I don't have the exact numbers, but I'm not going to be that wrong. If over the last 50 years, the average CEO has increased his or her wealth exponentially, while over the past 50 years, the minimum wage has barely gone up.
Uh-huh.
How can you have a successful consumer economy? You can't. It's going to break down at some point. The left brain can't understand that because the left brain's breaking it down and saying, hey, listen, I'm practical. I'm going to make as much as I can.
Yeah.
And let charities take care of everybody else.
Uh-huh.
That's how the left hemisphere thinks.
Yeah.
The people who are involved in charities are more right hemisphere thinking because they're more empathetic and more big picture. Okay. Let's continue with the neurology here. In the last 20 years, thanks in part to advances in functional magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, researchers have confirmed more precisely how the two sides, the left and right hemisphere, divide responsibilities. The left hemisphere of our brain's highest function is logical, sequential, analytic, rational. The left brain breaks everything down into smaller, simpler, knowable parts and always moves towards certainty. Our left hemisphere cannot tolerate ambiguity or uncertainty.
Hmm.
Well, then how can you be an artist or a creative thinker?
Yeah.
If you can't tolerate uncertainty or ambiguity. In contrast, the right hemisphere is intuitive, imaginative, seeks a big picture perspective. It operates out of curiosity, playfulness, and flexibility. Now, the left hemisphere person is going to say, thank goodness we're a left hemisphere culture, because imagine if we were right, everything would be falling apart. Everybody would be sitting down being creative and nothing would get done of a practical nature.
Uh-huh.
To a degree, they're right. You need a balance. But the point that Ian McGilchrist is making and I'm trying to make is, if you look at human history, right up till right now, we are so overly dominated by the left hemisphere that it's ruining us.
Yeah.
Okay. The left hemisphere seeks to know and control reality. The right hemisphere is open to change and collaboration. That's that sentence right there is all you need to know about what's going on. Why nature and evolution led to this clear divide between the two hemispheres is a subject of debate. But McGilchrist gives a very practical example. Easy to understand.
Okay.
A bird, small bird. Because other animals have left and right hemispheres. So a bird does.
Hmm.
So you ask, why did evolution create this? Right?
Yeah.
Okay, here's the reason. You're a small little bird. You survive by finding little seeds in the grass.
Mm-hmm.
So you go out to an open area, and in order to find those seeds, you have to be really focused, right?
Yeah.
Visually focused to find that seed. That's the left hemisphere of the brain. So if the robin or the finch didn't have a well-functioning left hemisphere, it wouldn't have the ability to focus such to find that little seed.
Uh-huh.
But it wouldn't survive anyway, even if it found all the seeds in the world. Why? Because if it was unaware of predators, then a hawk would get it.
Right.
So evolution or nature, whatever you want to call it, whatever field of intelligence is out there out of which we came, created a right hemisphere of the brain for that little bird. The right hemisphere is not thinking consciously. It's not focused on any specific area. It has a holistic, practical view of everything. It, because it is much more holistically aware, it can identify a shadow approaching.
Mm-hmm.
While the left hemisphere of the brain is focused on that seed.
Uh-huh.
Each one individually is not enough. If there was only the right hemisphere, it would be very good at anticipating danger. Lousy at finding seeds.
It would be very hungry.
If it was too left hemisphere oriented, it would be great at finding seeds and would be more likely to be gobbled up by a hawk.
Uh-huh.
So that's McGilchrist's, I think, very brilliant explanation of why this started happening in nature. Now, what we've done with it is a whole nother story.
Interesting to know if prehistoric Homo sapien, whatever, had the same split. When did this happen? I mean, obviously over millions of years.
Well, birds had it before humans, so we right. were born with it.
Ah.
Because evolution decided this is a good adaptation.
Uh-huh.
How much time we have? Okay, we won't get to Agatha Christie today. what McGilchrist does brilliantly, like McLuhan did brilliantly, and what I want to talk about in this talk I'm going to be giving. And if folks out there, if you belong to an organization and you're interested in this talk, just you contact me very simply, Doug at witchdocroundtable.com.
Yeah.
I love giving this talk. What McGilchrist does so brilliantly, like McLuhan, is he's a big picture thinker. He's very right hemisphere. And so he shows how the dominance of the left hemisphere was a huge advantage for a while, the Industrial Revolution,
right.
The invention of capitalism. Quote, it is the Industrial Revolution which enabled the left hemisphere to make its most audacious assault yet on the world of the right hemisphere, and underwrites the defining characteristics of the modern world. This movement was obviously colossally man's most brazen bid for power over the natural world. The left hemisphere doesn't have empathy. It doesn't have a big picture. Mm. It has a hard time. It's so busy analyzing, like that robin finding that seed. Mm-hmm. So in that analogy, our left hemisphere of our brain, historically and in our own case, is so busy finding seeds, it can't see the forest for the trees. So as a result, we get the Industrial Revolution, which was brilliant in creating more wealth, more goods, more comforts, more securities. But now we're seeing the fact that plastic is choking our entire environment. Right. How could that happen? How could we be so selfish and sloppy that all the plastic that we haven't banned is choking marine animals by the millions?
And we did
as
it
well
in,
as terrestrial animals.
In such a short time.
How could we let that happen? Because we're so freaking left hemisphere thinking. Yeah. We're so focused on getting what we want and need, we don't see the bigger picture of the damage we're doing. We better get this right pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Literally right. Right hemisphere. Right. Okay. When overloaded towards the left hemisphere thinking, McGilchrist writes, quote, one would expect a sort of dismissive attitude to anything outside of its limited focus. Welcome to our immigration problem. Because the right hemisphere's take on the whole picture would simply not be available. It takes conscious attention to make sure the left hemisphere isn't dismissing right hemisphere intuitions and insights simply because it challenges a predictable, ordered, sequential worldview. Mm-hmm. Our whole educational system is virtually based on predictable, ordered, sequential world points of view. We better get this right. In an article called Revenge of the Right Brain by behavioral scientist Daniel Pink, quote, last century, machines proved they could replace human muscle.
Huh.
Tractors.
Sure. Yeah.
This century, technologies are proving they can outperform human left brains. They can execute sequential reductive computational work better, faster, and more accurately than even those humans with the highest IQs. Doesn't it make sense? This is me now. Doesn't it make sense that if millions of human jobs are going to continue to be lost to computer intelligence, left hemisphere thinking, that we shift our economy to create work requiring the right brain attributes that computer can't match?
Yeah. What can we come up with that would involve so many people who
the right brain can figure that out?
Yeah, better hurry.
No, we better hurry. Focusing and practicing it. You say, well, how can I practice right brain thinking? All right, go to a bookstore or go to your online bookstore and look up right hemisphere thinking. How do I create it? I can give you some ways. Yeah. Visualization techniques, self-hypnosis, meditation, dream work. There are all sorts of ways
that can be practiced. There's so many things that we know. We know that cutting down trees is eventually going to lead to devastation for the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we continue to do it, even though we know that's what's going to
because
happen.
Because the left hemisphere is great at cutting down trees and creating products. It's brilliant at it.
Yeah.
It can't see the forest. It can't see what you just said.
Right.
To expect it to is like expecting a scorpion not to sting you.
Yeah.
No, it's not how it works. But we have a whole nother half. And by the way, anatomically, now this is objectively provable.
Uh-huh.
Anatomically, the right hemisphere of our brain is larger and more active than our left hemisphere. So it's not nature that's preventing us. It's us. It's our impatience, our fears, and our insecurities that are preventing us.
Yeah.
Not nature. Nature's given us the tool. The question is whether we're going to operate the tool most effectively.
Yeah. And not.
Especially after we've created a tool called computer intelligence, which is better at left hemisphere thinking than we are.
So if we give that up and go to the right, we're better off.
So we'll end this hour with some words from the great Jiddu Krishnamurti, the spiritual teacher. How does spirituality get into this? Well, see if your bright brain can't connect it. It's pretty clear. In our search for knowledge, in our acquisitive desires, which part of our brain functions by acquisitive desire? The left hemisphere. We are blunting the feeling for beauty. Right hemisphere.
Right.
We are becoming more and more specialized and less integrated. This is me now paraphrasing. When Krishnamurti says we're becoming more and more specialized, that's the role of the left hemisphere. Has advantages. Less and less integrated. That's the right hemisphere. Wisdom, right hemisphere, cannot be replaced by knowledge, left hemisphere. And no amount of explanation, no accumulation of facts, left hemisphere, will free human beings from suffering. Knowledge is necessary, left hemisphere. Science has its place. But if the mind and heart are suffocated by knowledge, and if the cause of suffering is explained away, life becomes vain and meaningless. I am saying you could translate that as saying, if we allow the left hemisphere to dominate our thinking, both as individuals and as societies, we're going to become vain and meaningless.
Yeah.
Gee, I wonder what that explains in our news right now.
Yeah.
Back to Krishnamurti. Information, the knowledge of facts, left hemisphere, though ever increasing, is by its very nature limited. Wisdom is infinite. It includes knowledge in the way of action, but we take hold of a branch and think it's the whole tree.
Yeah.
Through the knowledge of the part, left hemisphere, we can never realize the joy of the whole, right hemisphere. Intellect can never lead to the whole, for it's only a segment. We are trained to be intellectual. Our educational cultivates the intellect to be sharp, cunning, acquisitive, and so it plays the most important role in our life. Intelligence is much greater than intellect. There can be intelligence only when there is self-knowledge, the deep understanding of the total process of oneself. Well, that total process of oneself means we do a better job of integrating the two hemispheres.
Right. That's the bottom line.
And that's also
that.
The end of our hour.
Huh?
Now, what's going to happen in the second hour? We need the left hemisphere to figure that out because it planned it out. We're going to hear from the Sultan of Sonic Soul, Gus Mancini.
Yes, you sent us something.
Then we're going to open up our own. We're going to do a little trivia.
Oh, good.
Which is tricky because of computers, people can look up the answers. But that's okay. I have a way to play it.
Okay.
And we'll play a little trivia. And then we're going to open up the Woodstock Roundtable Jukebox to celebrate some of the greatest summer songs. But because we like our right hemisphere, what we're going to do is, in one case, we're going to find two versions of a great summer song and play them at the same time.
Yeah.
Why?
We like to.
Because to see what happens. We don't know.
That's
right?
No.
That's a right brain exercise. We don't know whether it's gonna, if it's total horrible, if they're banging off each other, we'll stop it.
Sometimes the magic works.
But a lot of times, whoa.
Yeah.
That's uncertainty. But we'll play with it. So join us for the second hour of the Woodstock Roundtable.